Radio, a morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen today. Most of us are concerned about the environment, and I think most of us recognize there's a connection between environmental pollution, chemicals, and human health, and the health of other living things around us. And particularly when it comes to our household, there are many ways in which the things we bring into the household can affect our health. During this hour of the Focus 580, we'll get some advice on green living from Annie Berthold Bond. She has been writing about the subject for some 20 years, including three books on the topic, Better Basics for the Home, Clean and Green, and The Green Kitchen Handbook. She's also the founder and editor-in-chief of Green Alternatives for Health and the Environment, a national consumer magazine designed to provide a community to the emerging environmental health field. And she's also the founding editor of The Green Guide, an Utney Reader Alternative Press Award recipient for general excellence in newsletters. And she's also involved in a new thing. It's a website entitled care2.com, that's care2.com, which is a site that has a wide array of resources for those concerned with the environment, whether it be globally or in the household. She is the producer of the Green Living Channels, which are a number of discussion areas where people can get good advice on green living. And she's been good enough to join us for this hour. If you would like to ask questions, that's what this is all about. You can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us. That is 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. If you match the letters with the numbers, that's what you get. Toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-WILL. Annie Berthold Bond, good morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. First of all, I wanted to give you a chance to say something about care2.com and the Green Living Channels. What's that all about?
Well, care2.com is a light green portal, as you say. I mean, you could come to that particular website, and there are about 1.5 million members, and you can do email, do e-cards. But we also have a lot of really great content on the site, and I am personally the channels producer for the Green Living Channels, and I have a very strong feeling that most people are very well-intentioned about choosing environmentally safe products for their home and for their health and the environment. And so, but they often don't know what to choose. And so what I've tried to do on the channels at care2.com is to have very practical information with great specificity so that if your problem is fleas, you go to the pets channel and you can figure out how to handle fleas in a less toxic way for your health and the family and the pets. Or if you're having a garden problem with snails, you could choose a less toxic pesticide there. Or for the home, how to clean the bathtub. I also have started a schools and offices channel so that people can around the country can sort of not reinvent each other's wheels, but learn what has worked in some school districts and not others, for example, for carpets or whatever. And also a Green Consumer Channel, and I've contacted a lot of experts to provide their information on these channels. So it's becoming what I want it to be, is a community of people to present ideas about less toxic solutions, really.
Okay. What is a channel, and what does it mean to produce for it?
Well, a channel is like a TV station. You could be on CBS or NBC or something like that. It's just it focuses a content, the content actually. Uh-huh. So there are 5 Green Living Channels, and one is called Pets, and that's one channel. Another channel is Garden. So that those are the channels. And so as a producer, I am basically like an editor. So it would be like I were editing a magazine on pets, and that would be the Pets channel, or editing a magazine on Garden.
Right. Well, a lot of these areas are very interactive. People can post questions and get answers or exchange information and so forth.
Yeah, I have a column that's also there called Care to Ask Annie, and there are discussion boards in every single one of these sections so that you can chat about these. And that's the brilliance of the Internet, is it develops a community so fast.
Right. I'm just looking at the site now, and there's just all kinds of areas, cleaning, personal care, indoor air quality, holiday crafts, gifts, you name it.
Yeah, it's been such a great opportunity for me to be able to gather experts together too, and an excerpt from wonderful books, and so it certainly isn't just my content at all. I've really had a great opportunity to pull from a lot of people.
Good. Well, let's dive into the content areas, some of them anyway, and talk a bit about what people might want to think about as consumers. Pretend I'm a dumb human, which is pretty close to the truth.
Well, aren't we all?
Right, exactly.
We're all sort of have the same limitations here.
Right. And I'm buying chemical products, I'm bringing them into my house and so forth, like any good consumer, I suppose. What might I ought to think about?
Well, I really, truly have a pretty simple approach to less toxic living in the home in terms of cleaning. And I think that a person needs to make a decision that they actually are concerned about their health and the environment, and take a few minutes to learn about this alternative approach, which I'll tell you. And then they're set for life. It's not that hard to do after you learn the few basics. And I think that you can mix and match making some of your own recipes using ingredients of kitchen cupboard ingredients and make some very effective cleaning products. I found that the old folk remedies actually the chemical companies have mimicked the old folk remedies because the chemistry was always good. And I have some guidelines if you want to buy your own commercial products, which many people still do, and with the combination of safer products that you buy in the store and mixing and matching some of your own recipes, I think you can have your house become much, much less toxic, much, much more restful place to be. So I basically have, in terms of buying commercial products, I have a few guidelines. One is there are signal words on products, and the signal words range from danger to poison to caution. And I think that there's a big misunderstanding in the consuming public that we're really truly protected by government in some way on the products we buy, that they've been tested enough, or otherwise they wouldn't be on the market. And that, I just have to say that is simply not true. There are products with incredibly poisonous ingredients and very toxic and carcinogenic ingredients on the market now. And the only thing we have to give us a guideline are these signal words on the products that will say something like poison in danger. And when it says something like poison in danger, it means just a few drops could kill you. And so, you know, people talk about make your floor so clean that you could eat off of it. You could kill yourself if you ate off of it after using some of these products. So I suggest people only buy products with nothing stronger than a caution on it, and that is a it's a product that only 2 tablespoons to a cup of that product could kill you. And that, an example of that would be a detergent, because all detergents are can be very dangerous if you drink them, but a caution is sort of my maximum that I suggest people use for buying products. Health food stores have very, very good cleaning products now. There's been a lot of competition in that particular natural food industry for coming up with the best environmentally safe products, and so I recommend health food stores for buying ready-made products. There's some terrific, terrific products on the market there. But I love to make my own homemade recipes, and I know a lot of people do. They're so easy, and I have 5 basic ingredients that I think if you get these 5 ingredients, and most of which most people already have in their house, you can actually clean anything in the house. And would you like me to just tell you what
Sure.
those 5 are?
Yeah.
The one is baking soda, and I buy a big box, and I use it for everything from making my own homemade soft scrubbers to taking odor out of laundry to using it as a non-abrasive scouring powder. The second ingredient that I recommend people buy is washing soda, and washing soda is the same family of chemical that as baking soda, but it's been processed differently, and it is much more caustic. And it doesn't give off harmful fumes. I mean, you do need to wear gloves, but it is the best substitute I know for a solvent, so that if you have a engine oil spill or soot or, you know, any big, horrible cleaning problem, washing soda works wonderfully. It even will peel wax off a floor. And Washing soda is usually next to borax in the supermarket, in the laundry section, and it's almost in every store in the country now. I rarely get emails from people saying that they can't find it. The third ingredient that I suggest people use is vinegar, and the baking soda and the washing soda are very alkaline minerals, and the vinegar is an acid, and so you use it for different kinds of cleaning problems, and I can talk about those. Cleaning the windows is certainly one of the top reasons for getting vinegar, but you need to add a little dab of soap and water to the vinegar because if you've used commercial window cleaners for years, you'll have left a residual wax on the windows, and the vinegar alone won't take that off. But once you add a little soap the first time and you get the wax off, you're set forever. I know a lot of people give up on non-toxic cleaning because they hear that vinegar is great, and then they get streaks, and they didn't realize that they had the wax buildup. So my fourth ingredient is a good liquid soap or a liquid all-purpose detergent. And I recommend, again, a health food store for these products because they tend to be purer and more concentrated. But in a supermarket, it would be something like Murphy's Oil Soap would be a all-purpose liquid detergent. Even though it's called Murphy's Oil Soap, it's actually a detergent. And in the health food store, there's Castile soaps or all-purpose liquid detergents. And the way to determine whether you need a soap or a detergent is how hard your water is. I happen to have quite hard water in the East Coast, and most people actually in the country now do. And so I need to use a detergent, otherwise I get a lot of soap scum because soap binds with the hard water minerals and makes soap scum. And so, therefore, I choose an all-purpose detergent, even though it's not probably the most, it's not as environmentally preferable as a liquid soap. And then my fifth ingredient is something that is not that common, but health food stores, again, have it, and it's called tea tree oil. It's Australian tea tree oil.
Oh, sure.
Spelled T-E-A, like a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And I choose this as a broad-spectrum fungicide. And so if I have a leaky roof or a musty bureau or mildew in the bathroom, I put about 2 teaspoons of tea tree oil to 2 cups of water in a spray bottle.
How about that? I didn't know you could use it like that. It's also used for dealing with common warts.
Yeah, and medicinally it's used a lot for fungal problems.
So yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, very good. We're talking this morning during this hour, Focus 580, with Annie Berthold-Bond. She's the Green Living Channels producer for the environmental website care2.com, and she's also the author of several books on green living and better basics for the home. That's one of the titles of her books. If you have questions along these lines, you are welcome to join our conversation around Champaign-Urbana. You can call us at 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. We're going to get some calls here in a minute, but just back up a little bit and ask a sort of a global question. How big a problem is it that, you know, we're bringing stuff into our house without thinking what it might be doing to our home environment? I mean, how greatly does this affect human health and so forth?
Well, I don't think anybody really knows the answer to that. I know that got into this because I got poisoned by a chemical that's on the market that was a pesticide that has been taken off the market now because it was claimed it's so neurotoxic, and I got central nervous system damage from it before it was taken off the market, and so I had to live in an environment free of chemicals, and it is very hard to do that in our society, and it took me a long time to understand the profound degree of pollution we actually all have in our homes, because once you can't have it there, you see it's everywhere, and it really staggered me to see how much sort of low-level pollution we're all living with, and I get calls and emails from people all the time telling me that they switched to non-toxic cleaning, their babies are now sleeping through the night, they're not getting headaches, they're feeling better. I think that there's sort of a general, exposure to a low level of toxic chemicals all the time wears us down, and once you start reducing that exposure, people just start feeling better. And there certainly are statistics available showing that housekeepers, for example, that use chemicals a lot have higher rates of bladder cancer and this and that. And you know, it's just a I think it's a matter of common sense that if we can try to reduce our exposure, the better off we'll be.
Well, very good. We have a call to talk with. Let's include them. And this is a listener in Champaign on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi.
Hello.
I've got a question about one thing that I cannot seem to find a good non-toxic way to do, and that is to keep carpets clean. And I wonder if you had any suggestions.
Yeah, I have, actually. And when I said that there was only one thing I haven't been able to figure out how to do, my problem is the dishwasher, and I'll come to back to that in a minute. It's very hard with hard water to use a phosphate-free detergent for the dishwashing machine.
Yeah.
But for carpets, what I do, and I've used a professional carpet cleaner for this as well as rented a machine and use this very successfully. There's a product available in health food stores called Infinity. It's an all-purpose liquid detergent called Infinity Heavenly Horsetail.
Infinity.
And
great name.
Yeah, well, horsetail is actually a plant. It's a weed that has a lot of soapy saponin, which is a soapy ingredient. But the a good concentrated detergent from a health food store will. I gave this particular product to a professional rug cleaner to clean an oriental carpet I had, and he said it worked better than any other commercial product he'd ever used, and or industrial product actually, because he was a professional. Mm-hmm. And it's concentrated, so you need to use about a quarter of the amount of what you would normally use. But I will steam clean carpets by renting a steam cleaner, and I will use that product. You just have to. So you want to find something that doesn't have perfumes in it or dyes, and again, to just browse through what's available at the health food store.
So you're saying that it would be possible to just rent one of those machines and then do it yourself, but just not use their chemical stuff.
That's exactly right.
Oh, that's really
and that's what I do. And you just have to rinse out those machines carefully, because a lot of, especially in August and September when it's flea season, because a lot of them have, the people before may have put a flea cleanser in there,
right,
and it'll be a pesticide, and you don't want to get the residue on your
right.
carpet.
Well, we did have someone to come in and clean a carpet last year, and the next day, my 4-year-old son, his eyes were so completely swollen up. I mean, it took like 3 weeks for him to. It was some kind of really strong allergic reaction to whatever they put in.
Yeah.
And we need to keep the carpets clean too.
No, absolutely. It's very. I have yet to find one of the companies that will come in and do it for you that has a perfume-free, safer product.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to tell you something about the dishwasher. that I do. I haven't really been able to find a good detergent either to use just on its own in the dishwasher. But one thing that I did read was that if you have, that the portion where you put the soap in or the detergent that closes, and then you have the portion that stays open, that little container, that what I do is in the one that stays open is put baking soda. And in the one that stays closed to do the detergent, so you're using only half the detergent that you would, and then the baking soda, acts as an abrasive cleaner, and that works really well. So that kind of cuts down at least on some of the detergent use.
Yeah, well, I might try that. I just have really hard water, and everything I've tried is leaves a residue that isn't the commercial product. But as I say, I'm in a different part of the country, and other places might have a much easier time.
Mm.
Unfortunately, the dish detergents, really the commercial ones, all have phosphates in them, and except for the ones you find in the health food store. And so it's a terrible compromise I'm making, and I feel badly about it.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly using half the amount sounds a lot better.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Other calls are welcome. The numbers again around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, toll-free anywhere, 800-222-WILL. Allergies seem to be a problem for a lot of people.
Yeah.
There may be just like some kind of like perfume put in something, can cause an allergic reaction that doesn't even, it's not even an essential ingredient into whatever it is or the product is.
Well, exactly, and I that's why again I recommend the health food store brands, because they don't do that unless they tell you, and if they put something in, it tends to be natural, and People can be less sensitive to natural fragrance than they are synthetic, but sometimes that's not the case. I know that, again, people are, I overwhelmingly get from everybody that they feel so much better when they start using less toxic products in the house. And it also talks about, when I was really sick, a doctor once talked to me about what they call the barrel analogy, that if you think of your body as a barrel and everything you put into the barrel fills it up, and so you spray the rose bushes with a pesticide, that fills it up, and then you use a oven cleaner, and that fills it up, and then polish the furniture or whatever, and that every time you put something in, it's for some of us, the barrel gets filled up and it overflows, and that's when you get sick. And so it is really great if you, the fewer things you put in the barrel, the less chance you have of getting into that overload. And I know that a lot of people that have allergies, if they can lower their sort of threshold of that's in that barrel, they don't get sick as much.
There seems to be an aversion to anything seen unclean, or especially that can have germs. Are we overly germ phobic, do you think?
Well, actually, we're facing a whole new problem with household cleaning and disinfectants, because there's been a lot of research coming out of Tufts University that is showing that the disinfectants that are now in every sponge you buy in my supermarket, and the disinfectants that are in the detergents, hand washing, you know, hand soaps and things like that, are very often, it's called triclosan, that the disinfectants themselves are causing drug-resistant bacteria the same way that antibiotics do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're causing actually a very frightening situation in our homes if we start using too much of the chemical disinfectants that are on the market, because the last thing we want is drug-resistant bacteria in our cutting boards. So I'm not kidding when I say I cannot buy a sponge in my town that isn't impregnated with a disinfectant. I have to go to a hardware store to buy a sponge that doesn't have the synthetic disinfectants in it. And so you have to have an eagle eye when you're reading product labels to see if it says odor fresh, stays fresh, things like that, that will designate that it has a disinfectant. I know that the Consumer Reports did a big research project on disinfectants a few years ago and found that there's just absolutely no way we can sterilize our homes anyway, so we shouldn't even think about trying to do that. It's just not going to be possible. And I have a few guidelines that, for example, I recommend people use cut meat only on plates or portable cutting boards that can be put in the dishwasher, because the high temperature of the dishwasher will kill the germs. You can disinfect sponges by boiling them for 5 minutes in water once a week or something like that, so you don't have to buy the disinfected, the products that are impregnated with disinfectants. You could also put sponges through the dishwasher. And the EPA recommends soap and hot water for washing your hands anyway, and as for killing germs, and so you don't need to buy soap with disinfectants in them. Research is implying, but I don't have anything definitive yet, that when you use essential oils to kill bacteria, it does not cause drug resistance. And so I have a lavender essential oil spray that I often use on our cutting board that I don't use meat. I don't cut meat on that cutting board, but like 2 teaspoons of lavender oil to 2 cups of water, that I often will spray the cutting board at night before going to bed and just let it set there and then clean it off in the morning.
Very interesting. Well, we have a couple other calls to talk with. Let's go on next to a listener in Urbana on line number 1. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, hello. I'm a science news writer and wanted to add just a bit that I discovered through research for a feature article on triclosan.
Oh, sure. Good.
For one thing, I think few people are aware, and perhaps you mentioned it while I was away from the radio, that Total toothpaste has triclosan in it, and that is what opened up whole new areas of consumer products for the use of triclosan and the addition of antibiotics.
Hmm.
So I talked to a laboratory that tests triclosan. One of the problems in its manufacture is that it is closely related to furans and dioxins. And therefore, in its manufacture, if it is not carefully controlled for quality, you will get a substantial amount of furans and dioxins, nothing that anyone wants to mess around with or have in consumer products. Mm-hmm. As an example, they found 1,700 times the legal limit per the EPA in some samples from developing countries. There's a big part of the problem. Once the market opened up, everyone in the world became interested in entering it, and no one is monitoring what is coming in to the country. Not a big problem yet, I believe, but something that is worth looking at, and I just thought I'd add my 2 cents.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad to hear about that. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to speak with you off the air if I could leave my name and number.
I'd love that. Thank you so much.
Okay, good. Well, appreciate that very much. Our director, Jason, will I'll put you on hold here, and he will talk with the caller and get the information, and that'd be great. We're a little past our midpoint. We're talking this morning with Annie Berthold Bond. She is the Green Living Channels producer for the website care2.com. That's care2.com. And she has over 20 years of experience as a authority and writer on green living. And we're talking about a number of issues pertaining to how we use products and maybe some good alternatives that would be less chemical-based and better for our health. If you have questions, we have one person waiting and plenty of time for others. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere you hear us around Illinois, Indiana, parts of the other states where our signal travels, 800-222-9455. We have a listener in Indiana next on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello?
Yes.
Well, I don't know whether this is appropriate or not. I got in on this rather late, but I came across a bunch of flatware in a drawer that's been moldering there for I don't know how long, and it's developed a kind of a green mold or corrosion on it. What can be used to, you know, sort of soak that and clean it off, do you know?
Moldering there like that. I'm assuming it's silver.
Well, it's silver and silver plated and, you know, all kinds of mixtures, I think.
Well, I have a couple suggestions. I think when it's that bad, if one of the things you could do is to soak it in a big pot of water, but you need to do this outside because you'll get sulfur dioxide, actually, which is about the last thing I want to be recommending people do, but it's a good start, is you put in a big pan of water and you take a couple sheets of baking of aluminum foil. And you put it in the water, and then you add about a tablespoon of salt and a tablespoon of baking soda. And you then drop the silver in there and let it set for a while, and you will get that rotten egg smell. But then you rinse it, and then you can go back and use a old-fashioned white toothpaste. Presumably this doesn't have triclosan and therefore follow-up dioxins or anything, but you put some toothpaste on your hand, your finger, and you polish with the toothpaste the silver, and it takes all the tarnish off. And I think that combination you would do very well. You could skip the soaking of the silver altogether and just use toothpaste if you'd like. But I was just thinking, if it has all that much corrosion on it, you might want to actually soak it.
It's an interaction between aluminum foil and the baking salt.
Yeah, but it sort of magnetizes the tarnish off onto the aluminum foil.
Does this have to be warm water or just ordinary?
Nope, it doesn't.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you very much.
That's an old, old folk recipe that's come down for years. I see it in all the old folk recipe books.
Good. Well, thanks for the call, and good luck with that. You know, I was just thinking as we were talking that there's sort of a couple contradictory trends going on. When, you know, chemicals became, you know, after World War II, we jumped on this bandwagon of better living through chemistry and so forth, and all these wonderful things that these new chemicals could do for us. And then later we kind of found out, well, gee, PCBs are really, you know, very bad, you know, to put in transformers because they cause, you know, major problems and dioxin and all these other issues that we're dealing with. And so now we're starting to get a little bit wiser about using chemicals in appropriate circumstances. At the same time, we have this globalization of the market and sort of, you know, as the caller before the last one indicated, There are a lot of products that maybe we know that we shouldn't be doing this, or that there might be problems in the manufacture if it's not controlled correctly. But unfortunately, because of market forces, the control on the manufacturer is much more problematic.
I know it's actually so frightening to me when because I mean pesticides are a great example. I mean and how they're pulled off the market, you know, left and right, but the damage that they can cause before they're pulled off is can be really profound. I am a really deep believer in the precautionary principle, so it's the opposite, which is to only put products on the market when we really feel like they're safe. And that's, I think, what everybody has to push for is that we have to be able to get the global market to start implementing the precautionary principle, because the destruction is just, for the environment and for health, is just, the toll's way, way, way too high. And one of the things I write about in Better Basics for the Home is that I recommend people use as much as they can only what are called grass materials, which are generally regarded as safe, and they've been around for so long, you know, like baking soda or vinegar, that whereas we all know, I mean, if you splash vinegar in your eyes, you're going to hurt yourself, but if you use common sense and you use generally materials that are generally regarded as safe, that you'll go a long way towards protecting your health and that of your family.
Mm-hmm. There's a temptation to cut costs by, you know, buying things that you really don't know too much about. I was thinking that we installed some vinyl blinds in our children's bedroom, and then, you know, a few months later, a story comes out that, you know, cheap vinyl blinds sometimes give off lead.
Right. I know it. It's just, and here you are doing the best you can.
Right.
I know it's extremely demoralizing. It really is. And so that's again where the precautionary principle is something that, you know, you just really, all of us have to push for, because that shouldn't happen. Your children shouldn't be vulnerable under those circumstances.
Yeah. Well, how can you know? I mean, how can you inform yourself as a consumer about what it is you're buying? I mean, what are some of the strategies that you can use to deal with that?
Well, I have Well, you know, it's interesting, actually. The Environmental Health Foundation wrote a book called Toxic Turnaround, and they compiled a list of the top four chemical groups we should reject. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good guideline, because it would have actually protected you in your situation, I think, from your blinds. It would protect a lot of us in a lot of different things. And I add a fifth chemical to avoid, but their list is their first one is pesticides, and their second one is toxic gases such as chlorine and ammonia. The third is heavy metals. Now you wouldn't have known that you had heavy metals in your blinds, but the fourth are volatile organic compounds, and those are. Formaldehyde is an example of a VOC. Also, solvents are, and I've added the fifth one, which is plastics, because plastics are increasingly a lot of the plastics are shown to be hormone disruptors, and I think that we should just have that be in our list of products to try to avoid. So when you shop for paint and you see that it will list on the label how many VOCs, and you try to buy a VOC-free paint or a low VOC paint, you'll be better off. It's really hard. It's why I do the work I do, because your question is probably the best question anybody could ask. It's very, very complicated to choose safe products for your family. Another thing, just basically, is to try to find material that's inert. The more inert it is, the less outgassing it will have, and more less problematic chemicals. So that you know that if the sun shines on vinyl, you can start getting the smell of vinyl, and that would be what it's not, which means that it's not so inert, and you would choose a metal one instead.
Mm-hmm. We have just about 14 or 15 minutes left during this hour, Focus 580. We're talking about alternatives for green living, ways you can go about solving the things that you have to do around your house in ways that are healthy or greener. And Andy Berthold-Bond is our guest. She's a producer of the Green Living channels, a variety of areas that provide information on green living at the website care2.com. If you have questions, if you'd like some advice, you can join us in the time remaining. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. One of the things you mentioned was pesticides, and a lot of people who have animal companions often have to deal with fleas and things like that. Are there some good ways of addressing that without using what are really some pretty scary chemicals?
Yep, there definitely are. I have found that, and again, we're sort of on a slippery slope because this is not a perfect solution for the health or the environment, but it's profoundly better than the other products that you could choose that are much more toxic synthetic pesticides. But the there's a product called D-limonene, which is a ingredient found in citrus peels. And so all of the citrus products that you see on the market are the citrus peel products. Solvents have D-limonene in them. And that particular material will kill all stages of the flea. And it is a volatile organic chemical, though. It does provide indoor air pollution, but it's a natural product, and it is, which I'm not saying that means it's safe, but it's much better for the environment than a synthetic product. And so you could only use this if you really, you should only use this if you open the windows and that sort of thing. But because it kills all stages of the flea, it's extremely effective for fleas, but you can't use it around cats because they're sensitive to citrus, but for dogs, it is really great. I've washed our floors with it, like once a week. What I do is I put about a quarter of a cup of citrus solvent in a bucket of water, and I wash the floors. And we don't have any fleas at all. We have two dogs. And you can get citrus shampoo, and it's just extremely effective. And so that is definitely what I recommend for fleas.
You mentioned shampoo, and that's another area that, people, we just, buy soap or shampoo or whatever. Is that another area that we ought to be concerned about?
Yes, in fact, there is an ingredient it's a byproduct in the sodium lauryl sulfate, which is a detergent that's in almost every shampoo that you can find anywhere, it's similar to the problem with bacon, and there's a byproduct of nitrosamines, and so that is a carcinogen. And so you have to, but again, every shampoo has this problem virtually anywhere in the country. Health food stores have detergent-free shampoos. It's very different to not, very used to using shampoo that is a detergent, and it's much more drying on the hair, so you don't need to wash your hair as often. And when you switch to a detergent-free shampoo, you suddenly have to wash your hair a lot more. They tend to be more oily.
Very good. We have a couple callers to talk with. Let's go next to a listener in Clinton, Indiana, on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, thank you. You were just speaking of fleas and a dog.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a dog alive probably doesn't have fleas, but I've used, as the guy told me, vet did, use 7-Dust. I know it's, used on gardens.
Well, I wouldn't recommend that at all for a dog. A 7-Dust, did you say?
Uh-huh.
Because it's a powerful pesticide, and it wouldn't be something that I would recommend on a dog myself.
Hmm.
Because I think it's an organophosphate pesticide, and they're very, very central. They're very hard in the central nervous system.
Okay. I kind of wondered about that because it is effective for a little
while.
Well,
I'm sure it is effective, but, there are safer ways to do it, and I would suggest you switch to the citrus.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Yeah, well, that's one of those, you apply this, it's like napalm or something to burn down, you burn down the forest along with
everything else,
yeah, the weeds.
I know, and his call is a perfect example of manufacturers that may say in tiny little print, only use this on weeds, and then the next thing you know, somebody's using it on a pet, and especially, again, in the global global world, you might not even be able to read the language that the warning is put in. And so people are misusing products all the time, and it's really, I think people need to be aware that they're dealing with very, very powerful poisons.
We have a couple other people to talk with. Let's go next to a listener in Mattoon on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning, Jack. What a informative guest, and we're so happy to have her talking in our area.
Good.
And oh, thank you.
I do mechanical flea picking myself. I find that's about the safest for all of us.
Yeah, I bet. Do you have a flea comb? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah,
and I pull it through the dog and immediately dip it into a vessel of soapy water.
Yep, and that would be perfect.
Yeah, it works for us. And my big concern right now, and I am anxious to look at your website, I'm needing some pots and pans that I can feel safe about. I don't use a lot of them at this point in my life, but I still do use some. And I thought the Calphalon was going to be great, and that's worn off. I now have an aluminum pan, and I've read so many things that have made me nervous about stainless steel because of it being made from possibly weapon materials with the radioactive component. And I really am kind of wondering, what do you feel is the safest kind of a vessel to use?
Well, I think it's an absolutely excellent question, and I have evolved on it also. I think probably the safest thing we could use for pots is glass. It's probably the most inert. Stainless steel also has some nickel in it. I've used that over the years as being safer than feeling like there would be less leaching than with aluminum. But I think also the brand Le Creuset has...
Yes, I know. Like the enamel.
Yeah, that's right. And there's less leaching in that, from what I understand. But it's a very, very good question. And the only thing I can think of that is would probably have the least leaching of anything is glass. But that's not going to work for a fry pan.
I think there is a glass product on the market, but I'm wondering if those are coated with. You know, they look to me like they're coated with something. I don't own any, but I know folks that do. And I have wondered about trying to buy older pots and pans.
I don't think that'll matter.
Okay, I've wondered. Thank you.
No, I mean, if you put tomato sauce in an old aluminum pot, it's going to pull out as much, you know, with the acidic tomato, will pull out as much aluminum, will pull out aluminum as well as it would 30 years ago.
So nickel is part of the stainless steel process, so you're always going to have that present?
I don't know the answer specifically,
okay,
but I would think so.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and I don't think anybody really knows what to suggest.
Okay, less cooking maybe.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for the call. We have just about 5 minutes left and one caller waiting. Probably time to squeeze in another one or two. Beyond that, if you'd like to join us quickly, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Next up, another listener in Mattoon on line number four. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Thank you. I have a self-cleaning oven and had to have the controls replaced, and now it doesn't function as a self-cleaning oven. Do you have a recipe or a formula for something that's effective?
I'm so glad you asked, because I have a recipe that nobody believes me that it works as wonderfully until they try it, and then I get letters and calls, and people say, oh my gosh, I can't believe how well that works. So believe me, this really, really works. What you want to do, and it's such an improvement over using a toxic product, you just cover the bottom of the oven with baking soda, and cover it so you've had a dusting of snow is what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a spray bottle with clean water, and you spray it or sprinkle water onto it till it's actually very damp.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have some problem on the walls of the oven, make a baking soda paste with water, a very wet one, and put that on the sides. And then all you do is you go away and you let it do its thing. And you every couple hours maybe go back and spray it, or before you go to bed, spray it again to make sure that it stays wet. And the only time this doesn't work well is if people don't use enough baking soda. So you don't want to overdo it because you'll have to rinse it all out, but you don't want to underdo the baking soda either. And then the next day, or maybe 6 to 8 hours later, if you want to put the baking soda on the morning, for example, and clean it off in the afternoon, you just take a wet a sponge and scoop, and it, all of the grime has been loosened, and it will just scoop out of the oven like you would as easily as you could imagine, and there's no scrubbing.
Oh, wonderful.
And then the only problem is just that you have to rinse it, but you have to rinse with a commercial oven cleaner, too,
right.
Otherwise all your food gets impregnated with those chemicals. So it's really... it's so easy, it really works, and the only downside is just the rinsing at the end.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. We have a couple of people waiting. We'll try to get at least one in before we run out of time. Next up, listener in Urbana, line number one. Good morning.
Yes. May I ask you, please, I didn't hear your first comment about using vinegar to wash windows, and you added something to that. Mm-hmm. What did you add?
Well, my recipe is to add about a cup of water or 2 cups of water in a spray bottle.
Yes.
And then 2 to 4 tablespoons of vinegar, depending on how much...
vinegar?
Yeah.
And did you say you added salt?
No, what you do is you add a dab of liquid soap or detergent.
Oh, a liquid soap or detergent.
And the reason you do that is to get the residual wax off the windows that has been on it from all the years of using a commercial product.
Yes. Oh, I didn't catch it. I didn't know whether it was salt or soap you used.
No, it's soap, and this is a really perfect window cleaner. I mean, and then you could also use it as sort of a all-purpose cleaner around the house too.
Could I use say ivory in it? Ivory soap?
Yep.
That'd be all right.
Yep, that would be fine.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. We'll squeeze in one last caller quickly. Listener in Rantoul on line number 2. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, I wonder, have you published a book about these things? Because I don't have a computer. I can't follow the dot-com business.
Well, in my book, everything I've talked about this morning is actually in my book, Better Basics for the Home.
Oh.
It's published last year.
Yep.
Three Rivers Press is the publishing company. Better Basics for the Home is the title of the book.
Yes. Who's the publisher?
Three Rivers Press.
Three Rivers Press.
And anybody can order it for you from a bookstore or a health food store.
Thank you.
Okay.
Your name, please.
It's Annie, and the last name is Berthold-Bond.
Berthold.
It's spelled Berthold hyphen B-O-N-D.
Like James Bond.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And I'll just mention, we're out of time, but I'll mention for folks, if you want more information and you don't have a computer to go to the website, you could always call here, WILL, ask for me, and I'll make sure that you get the name of our guest and any information that that you need. We're out of time, and there are many things we could talk about. One thing that I wanted to mention is the Ask Annie feature on the website, which has a whole lot of advice organized by topic and so forth. Can people actually post questions for you, and you can?
Yeah, they sure can, and I'll get it right in my email box. So by all means, please do.
Okay. All right, and that website again is care2.com, www.care2.com, and a lot of good stuff there. And our guest has been Annie Berthold-Bond. She produces the Green Living Channels, you'll find there, and also 3 books she's authored, so you can find those in bookstores, libraries, health food stores probably. And Annie Berthold-Bond, thanks so much for talking with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
I've enjoyed it.